Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bow tie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spill that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down.
Yeah, that's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. But before we do that, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, thank you, Sam. Once again, I want to welcome all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. Thanks to Ben Birch for hosting my archives. Also, my loyal listeners at rantradio.com. RadioPower.org, and CadronPictures.com. So many URLs, so little time. How is everybody doing? Last week was a banner week for work at Siemens. Now, for those of you who are listening in for the first time, I work for Siemens, which is a huge multinational company that deals with all sorts of high-tech stuff. But I don't work for all the high-tech areas. I don't work in their big fancy-schmancy places. I work in what we generously call the armpit of Siemens, the plant that manufactures circuit boxes for electrical outlets, the big ones that's in the walls with all the circuit-breaking switches in there, boxes like that. In fact, if you go to a Home Depot, you can find the things that we manufacture at Home Depot, either under the Siemens name or under Murray or a couple other names that I'm not totally familiar with. But Siemens is the main one. Now, I work on what they call the paint line, which is a long overhead conveyor belt with hooks hanging down where they hang the assorted boxes and whatnot so they can go through a big vat of paint and get painted. Once the boxes get manufactured, they take the sheet metal, which is, I forget what type of steel it is, but it's a certain type of steel, and it's in these huge, huge rolls of sheet metal, like a roll of toilet paper, except these rolls weigh like almost 10 tons. Okay, well, I don't know, I'm sorry, 10, about 4 or 5 tons, about 10,000 pounds, 8 to 10,000 pounds, very heavy stuff, and they go through machines which stamp them and fold them and cut them into different forms, and usually for boxes and some other pieces. At any rate, once that's done, they get hung on the conveyor line where they go through this big vat of paint and get painted. My job is to pull these parts off of the line after they've gone through the painting and dried and all that and stack them neatly in pallets or in baskets, stuff like that. We have two of these lines where I work. There's the front line, which is where they hang most of the really, really heavy stuff, and then there's the back line where we hang a wider assortment of stuff. Occasional big boxes, but a lot of other smaller stuff. But anyway, to get back to the story, I come into work Tuesday after having been in Orlando last weekend from at J-Con, the Japanese animation convention out there. And when I came back from work, I discovered that both paint lines had been down basically since Thursday, the day I had left. And you have to understand, this is a very old plant, and these conveyor belt lines are very, very old. We're talking about, they've been running nonstop for maybe 15 to 20 years. So, you know, they're not exactly like they're brand new. And, of course, in the company's desire to get as much production as they possibly can, they tend to overwork the machines, hanging literally tons of parts in them on a daily basis. I mean, it almost never stops. They shut down during the weekend. I don't think they actually shut the line off. I think they just leave it running. But it all gets shut down for the weekend, but for the most part, it's just running constantly. So anybody with three active brain cells would realize that sooner or later, all this work is going to take its toll on the machinery. But of course, our lovable supervisors live in a fantasy world where they can push and push and push, and nothing bad ever happens. Until it does, and then they have to work really, really hard finding someone else to blame for it. Now, my co-worker Dave told me that the line had been down, like I said, since Thursday, which was the day I left for Florida, and had stayed down on Friday and on Monday. And every time it started up again, instead of giving it a chance to get settled or get back going again or whatever, they just start hanging more crap on the line as if it was never broken. So not only do you lose all the production time with the line being down because it keeps breaking down, you also waste thousands of dollars in metal and parts because when the line stops, the parts that have to sit in the paint for long periods of time get ruined and have to be thrown away. So since the line was no good the whole evening, I went to help out some other people. And this was on Tuesday when I came back. I went over to the assembly area where they put the guts, basically, inside the boxes. They assemble it all. And that's the job. That's the job. Let me tell you, those people make a lot more money. I make about, right now, thanks to the raise we got because of the union, I get about maybe $12.60-something cents an hour total, with you count the regular pay plus my shift differential, which I think actually more like $12.40, $12.50, something like that. Excuse me. I got a drink. But the people on assembly, they don't do anywhere near the kind of physical work we do, and their job is nowhere near as stressful as mine is, because if something goes wrong and they need to change something, the line can actually stop, and nobody goes apeshit over it. We can stop the line where I'm at, but everybody goes apeshit if we do that. Supervisor, why are you stopping the line? Why did you stop that line? Well, because we don't have any baskets, or because we don't have any pallets, or because you're hanging three parts and there's only two of us back there, or you're hanging two parts and there's only one of us back there. You know? Well, you don't have that kind of pressure in assembly, and they make a lot more money now because that's skilled labor. It's skilled labor. And you know what the skilled labor consists of? They have these if you've ever been like in a garage where they have like hydraulically powered screwdrivers and stuff like that, they have the same kind of deal here, and they're kind of like just hanging there. So all you have to do is grab it, stick a screw in there, zzz, 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 and do that. And you get starting like $13.50 an hour. That's the start. And I'm looking to transfer there as soon as I possibly fucking can. Because, Jesus Christ, I'm getting sick of it. Because, you know, they really don't appreciate anybody on the paint line. They really do not appreciate anybody on the paint line. And that really pisses us off because we make the least amount of money of anybody at that shop. And we have the most physical job of anybody in that shop. Even if you're working the big heavy presses, you do not work anywhere near as hard consistently as we do, especially the way they hang stuff. And there are certain boxes and certain items that they hang that they really hang a lot of, and it's really a pain to try to keep up with. It's very daunting. It's very demanding physically. And it's, you know, it's just very stressful because if they're hanging them badly, if they're not giving you any space when they change parts out, which is where we get the most problems, then it can be a very, very difficult and stressful job. So anyway, when the first chance I get, I'm going to transfer over to assembly where they don't have anywhere near the kind of pressure that we have. And they make a lot more money, which, of course, is the way things should be. Now, you know, on Tuesday, it wasn't that bad a day because I got to work there and that wasn't a hassle. The only kind of sort of bad part was that I had to leave at 12, and a lot of the people on the shift that I was, the people I was working with, their shift ended at 12:30. So they weren't quite ready to end at 12 when I was ready to go. But I had to leave because I have a ride. Dave, my co-worker Dave, gives me a lift. I can't just hang around an extra half an hour and stay there and do work. And really, all I was doing was putting labels on a thing. That's all I was doing. I was they had the doors come. There was a box and they had the guts in it. And I was putting a door and I was putting a single label on each door, and that's it. You know, electrical warning label, and that was it. You know, and I stood there doing that. Now, I grant you that a lot of people would find a job like that boring. Me, I love that kind of work. I've worked in assembly before. And it's all, once you get down in there, it's all like muscle memory. And also, there's a lot of jobs where you can sit down. I stand up all day. And actually, I'm kind of surprised because I have a problem standing for long periods of time. But I never really have to bend over that much, so it's not that much strain on my back as I thought it would be. And at least we have a couple of very big fans there. It gets very hot in this building in the summer. And they have these very big overhead fans that we have to turn on. So we've got a little bit of a breeze in there, so that always helps cool us off. There's no way they can air condition that place, and I can understand that. So, but like I said, the assembly people, they get to sit down. Some of them do anyway, and, you know, they get to pretty much take it easy. Like I said, I've worked assembly jobs before, and I really, really do kind of like it because it's kind of mindless work, and it gives me a chance to think while muscle memory basically takes over. But that was Tuesday. On Wednesday, Dave and I came in, and we figured, hopefully, that the line would be fixed by then, but of course it was down. Now, Dave and I, what we do is we go to our work area. That's what we do, because this is where we work. We have no idea of what the status of the line is. Maybe it's going to be working again because there's parts up there. You can see the parts out of reach that we, you know, where we can't get to them. That once the line starts, they'll be down in a couple of minutes. And we don't know, you know, we have no way of knowing how soon the line is going to be starting again. And we have to be there. Somebody has to be there on the line just in case they start up again. And so we figure if there's some problem, if it's going to be down for a while, the supervisor will simply come and tell us, go to the front line, or go somewhere else and do something else. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. It's obvious that the line is down. But when I first report there, I have to go to the back. That's what I do. So here comes the supervisor over there. But instead of just saying, okay, I need you to do this and this and this and this, no problem, he starts with a loaded question. Do you exercise good judgment? And they said he started chewing us out for not automatically going to another area or going to the front line, seeing that the line is shut down. Now, I didn't say anything. I'm standing with my arms folded across my chest with a look on my face like, what, are you fucking shitting me? And Dave being the veteran, he's been there for 5 or 6 years. You know, he was a lot more vocal. You know, and he wasn't literally yelling at the guy, but he was obviously upset. And Dave almost never gets angry with the supervisor. I never really bother with it, to be perfectly honest, because I know he never listens. And he doesn't. He never listens because he really doesn't care. The only thing he cares about are the numbers coming down the line. And that's it. But he's sitting there chewing us out for wanting to basically do his job. And we should have tore into him. You know, hey, motherfucker, are you exercising good judgment by overloading the fucking line? Are you exercising good judgment by not trying to find out what the deal is with the line, as in when will it be fixed, and trying to figure out what the hell we should be doing while it's down? If I recall, that's sort of why you get paid 3 times what we do. It's your job to make these decisions, asshole, not ours. And you know, all he had to do was say, go to work on the front line, or go to work in such and such, and we would have done so. We wouldn't have questioned it. We had no reason to question it, because we're professionals. We don't want to just leave the line empty in case it starts up again. Because if that's the case, then the parts are going to keep going around, and nobody's going to be happy. And it finally did start up later on in the day, I think about 3 hours in. And it was kind of stopping and starting on and off the whole night. It was really a bad day. It would be going for like 2 hours, and then it would stop. And like I said, the main reason it was doing that was because as soon as it started up again, they'd start hanging more shit on the line. And, of course, that would cause it to fuck up. And finally, around 25 after 9, I guess, around 9:30, he decided to hell with it, and he just had them stop hanging stuff on the line. And we just kept pulling stuff off And throwing stuff out, consequently, because we had a lot to throw out because there was shit that was just sitting there in the paint vat for 25 minutes because the line had stopped. Anyway, finally, and we finished that up, and that had happened about 20 to 11, which is about an hour and 20 minutes. Oh, excuse me, about an hour and 20 minutes before we have to leave. And basically, in all that time, I just went off and hid. Now, you know, I talked to my wife about that, and she kind of got mad at me. She said, and I kind of agree with what she was saying. She was saying, you know, while you're there, you're supposed to be working and blah, 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 and all that. And I kind of agree with that. But, and be honest, I really hate, you know, having to do that. But at this plant, when you take that kind of initiative, it goes entirely unappreciated. And so I have no desire to do so. In fact, one of the arguments with my wife is because she would always, said she would always do stuff like that. And my answer was always, what has it gotten you over the years? Let me tell you something. Very few people will work as hard as my wife within her capabilities because she's not a very, you know, physical person. But she works her ass off. And she has never gotten anything to show for it. Never had any damn thing to show for it. If you're going to work hard, be appreciated for it. Get something out of it. And, you know, the plant where I work, they don't even care. As long as I'm out of sight, they aren't concerned with what I'm doing. And as long as there's no work in my area that needs to be done or nothing that gets undone or not something that gets nothing that needs to get done, I'll say it right, they really don't care. Now, you know, I'm sorry if that pisses some people off. I'm sorry if that attitude about the work and the workplace pisses some people off. And I realize that there are people who are, you know, definitely concerned about that sort of thing and who want to go out there and work all the time and be a good employee and stuff like that. And, hey, I'm the same way. I really do feel that way. But if you're out there thinking that all it takes is just doing whatever you're told and you'll get appreciated for it, well, then you're free to think that way. But keep in mind that there's people in Mexico and Vietnam who will work twice as hard for far longer hours for $2 an hour. So if you're interested in lowering the bar for working people, then I hope you can compete with them because that's where you're competing with. All right, let's take a little break. We'll be back with more. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Well, bust out the duct tape and dust off the plastic sheeting. Tom Ridge, our fearless protector of the homeland, is back. Back from where, you ask? We don't know. Maybe Karl Rove keeps him in a closet with a box of 3M's finest. Poor Tom. Rove seems to only let the guy out when he needs to trample some bad news about Bush, usually by supporting another vague, meaningless Ashcroft terrorist alert. And this time, Tom scurried from his hidey hole on the exact same day that Al Gore skewered Bush and company in a scathingly accurate assessment of the dishonor and corruption the White House has brought upon America. It also just happened to be a day when a report was released that indicated American military torture and abuse of prisoners was widespread. And it also just happened to be a day when Bush's poll numbers were falling faster than, well, Bush from a mountain bike, or a Segway, or just the edge of a couch. But the timing of Ashcroft and Ridge was all just a coincidence, right? No. But don't ask the press corps to ask anyone about it. Although it's been a while since the last color wheel of terrorism news fright, BuzzFlash thought the American press had actually awakened somewhat from their 9/11 trauma and might be more suspect of the Bush administration's motivations. Apparently not, since the strategy of bury the important bad news on Bush with weak terrorist scare story seems to have headlined most of America's news sources. Message to the media. Here's a clue to what's really going on. Ridge on NBC's Today Show said there are no plans to raise the national alert status from yellow, where it has stood since January.
There's not a consensus within the administration that we need to raise the threat level, he said.
Wait a minute. John Ashcroft announces that Al-Qaeda terrorists are in the United States, poised to launch a devastating attack. But Ridge says that there's no need to increase the crayon color alert? To quote John Stewart, what? If there's one reason that we can all agree on to boot Bushco in November, it's the hypocrisy, stupid. And we get lots of that from useless, rove-shilling, taxpayer-salaried Bush administration employees like Tom Ridge. You know, what do we pay Tom Ridge for anyway? The only thing he's ever done is provide bucket loads of vague, threat-filled information and boost the bottom line of companies that make home repair and improvement products. Ridge is a prop that Rove trots out during times of politically sensitive news. If all they need is a hand puppet, why don't they just hire someone to impersonate Tom Ridge? You know, we bet the Screen Actors Guild knows a few people who might be interested. Tom Arnold even looks a little like him. Besides, it's not like he ever has anything important to say. The really fun stuff goes to Johnny Boy. Ashcroft, fresh from trampling rights across America, really outdid Tom when he said, "Ideal Al-Qaeda operatives may now be in their late 20s or early 30s and may travel with a family to lower their profile. Our intelligence confirms Al-Qaeda is seeking recruits who can portray themselves as Europeans." Holy cripe! Family men pretending to be Europeans? Someone tell Clark Griswold that Ashcroft and Ridge are after him, and if they catch him, laws be damned, he'll end up in an orange jumpsuit at National Lampoon's Gitmo Vacation. So, Tom Ridge, until the next time Rove needs to steal the headlines and they loosen your leash to parade you in front of the cameras, we hope you've enjoyed the fresh air your support provided, and we honor you, drumroll please, as this week's BuzzFlash GOP hypocrite. You sure have earned it. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
The Tucker Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. The URL, once again, for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, or you can also go to cupjoe.com if that's too big for you, cupjoe.com, and you can click onto the blog from there or listen to the show from there, however you want to do that, and my email address. And I always encourage people to both write me and to comment on the board. And by the way, I want to say hello to my friend TS, who is having trouble with the stream, and I hope he gets that thing fixed. But T.S. is an old friend of mine from my Montana days. We actually made a couple of cute little films together while we were up there. One little thing called Walk You, and we did an Army recruiting film, one of which where T.S. was up there changing a light bulb, saying, "I'm learning electronics. I'm studying electronics," while changing a light bulb. We had a lot of fun while I was up there. He was a good friend to have, and I used to drive over to Missoula, Montana, to hang out with him on occasional weekends. We also used to go to MISCON, a science fiction convention up there. So that was real nice to hear from. But I always encourage people to comment on the blog or to email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. joevec@bellsouth.net, short for Joe Vecchio. And I wanted to talk about this for a second because it's kind of an ongoing thing in the blogosphere concerning people being anonymous. Now, I made a point of saying who I am, what my name is, and there are a lot of people in my past who have come up and, you know, and said, I can't believe you're doing this stuff, or I can't believe you turned into such a political animal or whatever. My friend Ravel, who I knew when I was in Misawa, Japan, and, you know, my friend T.S., who's out there. But there are a lot of bloggers who remain anonymous, and the two biggest ones probably are Atrios and Bart Cop. And I happen to know, at least in passing, both of these gentlemen. I actually have spoken with Bart Cop on the phone on a couple of occasions, but that was a long time ago. He knows who I am, even though he's busy with a lot of other things. And Atrios I have spoken to in chat rooms from time to time, but he is a very, very busy person. And, you know, he has his reasons for being anonymous, and I respect that to a certain extent, although I do believe that in the long run, that sort of anonymity will hurt you rather than help you. So I made my personal decision to go ahead and say who I am. My name is Joe Vecchio. I live here in Decatur, Georgia, and to a certain extent, I'm taking some risk in revealing that information, but to me, it's a risk that I have to take. And while I'm not about to lead somebody to my front door or give out my home phone number here on the site, I don't mind giving out my email address, my personal email address, and I don't mind letting people know who I am and, you know, generally, in general, where I live. And it's weird because people say, well, you don't sound like you're from Georgia. Well, yeah, I'm not really from Georgia, although I've lived here for the last 10 years or so. And, you know, there's a misconception about New Yorkers, and I am a New Yorker. There's a misconception about Southerners just as much as there are misconceptions Southerners have about Northeasterners in general. And it's very disconcerting to me on those rare occasions when I go back to the city to hear people disparage Atlanta in particular, because Atlanta is not like the rest of the area of the South. It has a lot of problems because it has to deal with these rednecks that live outside of the borders of the Atlanta proper area, not the least of which is the fact that you have a governor who is very anti-public transportation, at least when it comes to Atlanta is concerned. But Atlanta is a very, very cosmopolitan city with a lot of good things to offer. Hell, we've got all the major sports represented here, and a lot of cultural things. We have a world-class sushi chef that lives here in town. We have very good supermarkets. We have a lot of good things going for us. We have great museums. We're going to have an aquarium built down here in 2005. So while Atlanta is not New York City, and I'm not claiming it's New York City or Philadelphia or Boston or any of the really big industrial cities in the Northeast, for the South, Atlanta is a very, very cultural and refined city. And people who've lived here for a long time do not have Southern accents. They don't have that Southern drawl that I'm very bad at doing, as you can hear right now. They just don't have that. So, but I wanted to get that cleared up. But I was, but back on the subject of being anonymous, I feel that it's very important to speak out about who you are and say it. And the reason I bring that up is because the Reverend Alan Brill, who does the RightChristians.org, and that's, it's now known as the Village Gate, but that's the same website. It's the RightChristians.org, and it takes its name from a comment by Al Sharpton, of all people, who said it's time for the Christian right to meet the right Christians, because there are progressive Christians, there are Christians who are Democrats, and the Republican Party and the media in general would like to have you think that all of us on the left, all of us who are Democratic Party supporters, are not religious at all. And that's just simply not the truth. I'm not a particularly religious person myself, but I happen to know for a fact that there are a lot of people who are on the Democratic side who are very religious, but they don't necessarily like to wear it on their sleeves, especially up in the Northeast. I know that Dr. Dean, former Governor Dean from Vermont, who was a presidential candidate, got into some trouble because he was asked about his religious beliefs. And I understand where he's coming from, because where he comes from, people don't wear their religion on their sleeve like that. It's a very personal and intimate thing. They may believe just as strongly as anybody else, but they just don't like to push it on people, or they don't like to wear it on their sleeve and force it down other people's throat. And they do a lot more of that down here in the South. People's religion is very much openly part of their life. Whether you're talking about working class people like where I work, mostly black people, and they're very, very religious. I mean, you go to a union meeting, and it's almost like a prayer service. I'm serious. They say a lot of prayers, and there's always a lot of praise Jesus who gives us all, you know, whatever. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that. And you also have the hardcore rednecks who simply believe that their gods gave to man, and who use their religion as an excuse for their racism and for other things. But Reverend Brill was a little upset because he didn't believe that Atrios and other left-wing sites were giving religious progressives enough credit or stating out. There was one particular post that Atrios did about how, you know, they're not doing enough. They're not doing enough fighting. And they really are doing a lot of fighting behind the scenes. They're just not as open and vocal about it as the religious right are. And the religious right, they're not really about religion as much as they are about control and power. And they're very, very good at that. Don't get me wrong. They understand how to make a very strong grassroots society. I mean, let's face it, they essentially have taken over the Republican Party. Even though they're not a majority, they hold enough votes to have control of it. Because if they were to abandon the Republican Party would be finished. The Republican Party would absolutely be finished because this is the majority of their voting base, the people who are their most fervent supporters. The middle-of-the-road type people are the ones in, like, the Northeast or in the middle part of the country, like Ohio and western Pennsylvania and all that area, where there's still kind of a working-class Republicanism, Reagan Democrats or Reagan Republicans or something like that. And they're very much – they're fairly conservative, much more conservative than a lot of us New York liberals are. And, of course, you know, New Yorkers are liberals for a reason, but I'm not going to get into that. At any rate, Reverend Brill was discouraged because of the feud with Atrios. He was under the impression that Atrios was now boycotting him and not mentioning him on his site. And, you know, I kind of get into that with Atrios sometimes, too, because he knows who I am, and he's never blog-rolled me. He's never put my site on his blog, never even mentioned Cup of Joe blog on his blog, which is his recourse to do. I reluctantly put a link onto for Atrios onto my blog simply because he is a regular read, along with Daily Kos, which the guy's name is Marcos. I don't know his full name, but he is not hiding his name either. RightChristians.org or The Village Gate, which is their actual name, and JuanCole.com, a couple other places like that. But I put him on there, and he's not going to reciprocate. He doesn't need to reciprocate. And it's the same with Bart Kopp. Bart Kopp will occasionally acknowledge that I exist. I did buy an ad from him a while ago when I had some extra money. So, you know, he's happy for that. He's always happy because he is now in a position, and he has been for a while, of having to live off of his donations, basically. And Atrios has gone along the same lines, trying to make a living purely on his donations because he's going to be losing his well-paying job soon. And he can get away with it. I can't. And I understand how Reverend Brill feels because those of us who are kind of off on the side, we have been overtaken by blogs like Atrios and Daily Kos because they're just so big with all the thousands and thousands of hits they get a day. And I feel sometimes pretty left out because it's very difficult for me to write a blog regularly, and I certainly cannot make multiple posts a day like these guys can, because I work 40 hours a week, and the type of work I do is very, very physical. So when I get home, I'm extremely tired, and if I want to write, I don't have the energy for it. I mean, when I get tired, I'm just like, ah, and I can't simply take a lot of coffee, Mountain Dew. In fact, I'm trying to cut down on my Mountain Dew, because of all the sugar and the caffeine in it. It's not good for me. It's not good for my system. And it's difficult because I'm getting these headaches now. You get a lot of that caffeine withdrawal headaches. So I can't post as much as often as these guys do. And I could try to be like them. I could try to be like them, but really it would just be a poor imitation. So I do the best I can to try to provide a unique voice and a unique blog, something that's different from everybody else. And basically, I have an open thread for when the shows come out, and I'll write a column here and there about how I feel, and I write these kind of highfalutin commentaries, editorials. And actually, I wouldn't be a bad person to be a semi-regular on one of the larger blogs, and I would actually prefer that because it would take some pressure off of me to have to perform it. I think a lot of bloggers feel that way. I tried to start something called ICB News, where I could get a whole bunch of people and have like a regular blog that was constantly updating because we had so many people on it. And it kind of fell through. Everybody wants to do their own little thing. And I suppose that's fine. But for those of us who sit here, and I get maybe 50 hits a day on the blog, if I'm lucky. if I'm lucky. I average about that much. And every now and then I get a bit more because I'll post something on Atrios or I'll post something on Daily Chaos and a bunch of people will come and see my blog. And they won't hang around very long because I simply don't post that often. If I'm lucky, I'll get two or three posts a week. That's a lot. That's a lot for me. So, Atrios remaining anonymous, and he's on Air America now. I just don't know how he can maintain that forever, especially if he's talking about becoming a serious player in the political world. You can't remain anonymous if you want to be vocal on the radio like that. I realize it was done back with Publius way back in American Revolutionary times, a person who wrote anonymous papers. But there's a difference between writing an anonymous paper and having it distributed like that and going on the radio and talking. And the fact of the matter is, if someone finds out who he is, they can, I don't want to say blackmail him, but they could use that against him. Because the reason why he stays anonymous, one of the reasons, is because he's worried about retribution from the thugs on the right. And I wouldn't put it past these people to do something physical for him. Physical to him. Throw some bricks through his house or maybe even burn a cross on his front yard. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't put it past him. Frankly, I'm afraid of what might happen if George Bush loses the election. And I'm really not sure what's going to happen there. I know these people are fanatics, and I cannot see them accepting defeat in any way, shape, or form. So, but anyway, I understand how Alan feels, because he feels discouraged that he's not getting any much more popularity than he is getting. He probably should get a lot more. He gets a lot more than I do. He gets in the hundreds of hits a day. Like I say, I get about 50. So I'm really down on the far end of the blogger scale. Not a lot of people listen to read my stuff on a regular basis. I do have some very loyal readers. Carolyn C., I haven't seen her for a long time. She used to post quite regularly, but then there was a time where I didn't post anything for like 2 weeks or so when my wife was in a hospital, and she kind of stopped posting from there. Maybe she's had some technical difficulties. I don't know. But I do encourage people to comment on the blog so that I can hear what's going on. So if you're listening to this, just leave a comment in the open thread for this show. This is show number 34, excuse me. See, I even lose track of it. There'll be open thread show 34. Leave a comment, say something, let me know you're out there and that you exist, because it's very important to me to have some interaction. It makes the blog more interesting and it makes things better for me. Also, email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. Remember, that's V as in victory. joevec@bellsouth.net. To Atrios, I say, sooner or later, you're going to have to reveal who you are. And you're going to have to accept that risk, especially if you want to be as much of a player as you claim to want to be. And Bart Kopp, it's the same way. You can only get so far being anonymous. And also, I want to reiterate to Bart Kopp that he's spending way too much money on his little studio setups. But that's another story. I've done my whole deal here for, God, less than $100, I think. Very, very inexpensive, and I can continue to do two shows. And the only thing really holding me back is the amount of time and energy that I have to put these shows together. So, Alan, Reverend Vril, I admire you. I think you're a great writer, and I think The Village Great is a great website, and I encourage all of my readers to go there, therightchristians.org, just exactly as it's spelled, exactly as it sounds, The Right Christians, no underscores, no dashes, no nothing, rightchristians.org. Just go there, read what they have to say. There are several people there who post regularly, and they do a very, very good job. And give him whatever kind of support you can as far as commenting or just being a part of their community. Because, you know, there are those of us who do have religious beliefs. I'm not necessarily one of them, but I can respect other people's religions as long as they're tolerant of my beliefs. I'm tolerant of everybody's beliefs. And I feel bad that Reverend Vril feels like he's being discounted by other members of the left, especially the bigger bloggers. And I wish I had some better answers for you, but don't give up the ship. I certainly haven't given up. I could have given up ages ago. But, you know, I'm going to keep doing these damn shows whether anybody listens or not. This is my way of letting off steam about what's going on, not just in the workplace, but in the world. My feelings about the Bush administration, and not just its anti-worker policies, but its policies towards life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and their lack of desire to want to see us have any of those, so long as he gets some of his. And it's really, you just keep doing what you can. And again, to everybody listening, please give a comment on the blog or email me and just let me know how things are going. And if you've got something you want me to talk about, send it to me, because that makes the show more interesting. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, I want to remind you of the URL, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please, please write me, let me know what's going on, give me stories to talk about, you know, something, right? It's something you could write, you know. I sit here alone day in and day out, and nobody ever calls, nobody talks. You would think that you could drop a letter, drop a line, drop a note. No, you can't do that. And why am I talking in this bad Jewish accent? Why am I a good Italian boy? Also, I want to welcome all my friends listening in at the White Rose Society. Thank you to Ben Birch for hosting my archives there. He's been doing a very good job of that. I donate to his site. Please donate to the White Rose Society. They are a very, very good organization that archives many, many liberal talk shows, as well as my own. And I'm very glad that he does that. Also, my listeners at rantradio.com, all you kids out there, you kids with your hair and your clothes, what's the matter with you? What am I doing on this station? I don't know. Also, my friends at RadioPower.org, where I'm on occasionally. I never know when the hell I'm on. They never really schedule me regularly. I'm just kind of like, well, we've got an hour of free space. We'll toss Joe in there. We'll see if that picks up some fucking ratings. We don't know. And also, my friends at CadronPictures.com, who are listening in there. Oh, where was I? There was a article in the New York Times today. I think it was today, the 30th. Yeah. And it was by Frank Rich, who used to be one of their editorial writers and now is in charge of, like, the media / entertainment area for that. But he still writes some really scathing reviews, scathing reports about stuff. And he had one, and he was talking about, well, the title of it was the porn that made them do it. He was talking about the Abu Ghraib situation. I'm going to read something from it where he talked about how one Iraqi was asked, when the U.S. invaded, what he hoped the Americans would bring. And Jim Dwyer of the New York Times reported that the answer on the front page of the Times said, democracy, whiskey, and sexy. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. The joyous memory came rushing back after the grim revelation of yet another kink in the torture regime at Abu Ghraib. As if sexual humiliation and violent abuse weren't punishment enough, the guards also made prisoners violate Islamic practice by force-feeding them booze. Other reports that I have from JuanCole.com and other sources say that our soldiers routinely kicked them, forced them to curse Islam, or tried to make them curse Islam and praise Jesus, which is unbelievable. And how do we square, according to Mr. Rich, how do we square the tales of American cruelty with the promise of democracy we thought we were bringing to Iraq? One obvious way might be to acknowledge with some humility that our often proud history has always had a fault line running from slavery to Wounded Knee to Mylae. And, of course, there are accounts of Andersonville, which was the Confederate-run Civil War prison at which some 13,000 Union soldiers died, prisoners of war, if you want an echo of some of Abu Ghraib's inhumanity. But there's an easier way out in 2004. Just blame Janet Jackson for what's gone wrong in Iraq, or if not her, then Jenna Jameson. Now, it seems laughable, but it's not a joke. Some of our self-appointed moral leaders are defending the morally indefensible by annexing Abu Ghraib as another front in America's election year culture war. Now, Mr. Rich is spot on in his assertion here, of course, that the apologists for the Bush administration and for what's going on are willing to go along with anything so long as it supports their president and their cause. They don't really care that U.S. soldiers tore open glow sticks and shoved it up the asses of these people, because that's what they did. You know, that's not interrogation. That's simply torture. And let's not forget that the Red Cross, which is hardly a left-wing political organization, said that 70 to 90% of these people were simply there by mistake. And that they had no reason to be there. They were not guilty of any crimes whatsoever. They were mainly just a bunch of poor schmucks that we picked up on one of our numerous street sweeps. And we forced this stuff up their asses, and we forced them to drink liquor, apparently, and we're trying to get them to convert to Jesus. Yeah, that's a real convincing argument. I was sitting in a dungeon. I was minding my own business. I was listening to a lovely Hebrew mass. Then these papist Persians plunge in, and they throw me in a dungeon, and they shove a red-hot poker up my ass. Is that considerate? Is that polite? And not a tube of Preparation H in sight. That's from Mel Brooks' History of the World, the Inquisition song. And that's basically what's going on here. And, you know, it's just typical of Western culture to sit there and claim moral superiority, then turn around and do bullshit like this. I have something to say to all of you out there who think, well, it was just Arabs or souls, you know, it doesn't really matter. Bullshit. You don't treat human beings this way. I don't give a shit if they're the worst of the worst. We have an obligation to be morally superior for several reasons. And if it means giving up occasionally some information that might save American lives, well, sometimes that's what you have to do. Because the price that we pay for doing this is far greater than any military loss we might conceivably have because of a lack of information. You don't treat people this way. And especially if you call yourself a Christian. What did Jesus say about how you treat the least of us? How you treat the least of us is also how you treat him. And it is amazing to me to hear Christians defending this. And I'm glad my wife is not here to hear this, because she doesn't like me to talk bad about Christians. But the truth of the matter is, there are a lot of Christians who are sitting there and condoning this behavior, and that's just plain fucking wrong. You don't have to be a religious person to have these kind of morals, to understand that shoving a glow stick up someone's ass is a bad thing. And I should also remind you, it's a highly illegal thing. We signed the Geneva Convention. We agreed we would abide by its rule. Now we have a U.S. attorney, Alberto Gonzalez, who wrote a memo to the president saying, well, they don't count because the war on the Geneva Convention is no good anymore. We don't really need it. And it doesn't apply here anyway, because this is the war on terrorism, which, of course, Iraq had fucking nothing to do with. Why is this such a difficult proposition for people to understand? Iraq didn't have anything to fucking do with 9/11. These people who are in Abu Ghraib are not terrorists. They're not al-Qaeda terrorists. They're just mostly 70-90% of them, unlike what Mr. fucking Inhofe says, were just there by mistake. They had no business being there. And here we are humiliating them, torturing them, just because we enjoy it. And, you know, for the people who are shocked and outraged about our behavior, guess what? This is how Americans are. This is how Americans are. Do you want to see postcards? You can go online and look up pictures of postcards that Southerners used to send when they used to attend lynchings. You know, it wasn't just hung out somewhere in the back of the woods somewhere in private. No, they do it right in a big fucking city, and they make a big party out of it. And they take postcards, and they'd send it out to people. Hey, here we are. We got them darkies. We got them black people. They're hanging up there, and look, they're selling whatever. They're selling some hot dogs and burgers down there while it's going on. That's what they used to do. You think I'm fucking kidding you? Just do a Google search for it, for lynching and pictures or whatever. Just do a fucking Google search for it, and you could find it. We love to kick the shit out of people who can't fight back. We love to do that. It's in our nature. It's in our blood. Only rarely have we risen above that. We rose above that after World War II. We didn't treat German POWs like this. Even in the concentration camps that we had for the Japanese, we didn't round them up and shove things up their asses. Now, we did just as bad there, though, and to a certain extent, we took their property, we took their lives, and we took their livelihoods. And you know, how do they repay us by that? For that? They go up there and they fight, and they are with the most decorated combat unit in the U.S., out in Europe, the Japanese battalion that fought out there. I forget which one it was. It was a combat infantry unit. And they had more decorations than any other unit in the United States Army. They fought for their country, even as their country was screwing them over. But even the worst depravities of the concentration camps that we had, if you can call them that, the replacement camps, or the displacement camps that we had for the Japanese during World War II, who, by the way, we had legally declared war on, were not as bad as what was going on at the Abu Ghraib prison. The type of things that went on at the Abu Ghraib prison were the type of things that the communists did to us and what the Japanese soldiers did to us with the Bataan Death March. If you want to win victories, you have to be morally superior. It's not just enough to beat the hell out of somebody. Once you have made them not a threat to you, you have to reach out your hand and help them. And let them understand that violence is not the way to solve the problems. But of course, we are Americans. We think violence is the only way to solve problems. At least the bulk of us do. Enough of us do to allow assholes like Bush to get in and to continue to praise him for a job that he is doing very badly. As I keep saying, it's one thing to be a warmongering cocksucker. It's another thing to be an incompetent warmongering cocksucker. And that's exactly what these fucking people are. Not only are they vicious, greedy, and unconcerned with the lives and welfare of anybody outside of their own little circles, but they're also incompetent. They thought they could throw a whole bunch of shit on Iraq and flowers would grow and the people would take the flowers and make them into leis and hang them around the necks of American soldiers as they came to liberate them. What fucking fantasy world are they living in? What planet is this that they are on? Is the weather good there? They're certainly not on fucking planet Earth, because as you can see, the people that we are up against don't want us there. We had no business invading in the first place. The only way it would have been legitimate, even in my eyes, and I'm not a pacifist, people. Let's get this clear. I'm a veteran. I come from a family of veterans. I believe in a strong defense and a strong military. But that's not how you win victories. You don't go around punishing these people like this and assume that they're just going to come to your side. And you don't go around declaring war on countries just because you think you can kick the crap out of them easy and because it serves your interest to do so at the time. We supported Saddam Hussein when it served our interest, and then as soon as he went a little overboard, and I'm not really sure what the hell happened, because we did invite him to attack Kuwait, you know, or basically we told him that we wouldn't get involved, and then when he did, we kicked his ass. And we did the right thing, actually, in hindsight. We did the right thing in leaving him in charge there. And then Bill Clinton did the right thing when they bombed the shit out of him in 1998 to make sure that they couldn't become a threat to anybody else. They were no threat. And just because we have all the weapons in the fucking world, it doesn't give us the right to just go in there and kick somebody's ass and take something that belongs to them. And guess what? They don't want us there. They simply don't fucking want us there. Why is this such a difficult proposition, as I said before, to understand? Why is this so fucking tough for some people to realize? These people are human beings. These people are human beings. And on top of the stories about the male prisoners' abuse, there's now stories coming out about female prisoner abuse, about how women were raped and forced to do things that I will not repeat on this show, just in order to humiliate them. And as hostages to get other people to fess up. Because these women that they took and they raped and they did things with were not involved with any kind of criminal activities in any way. They were just regular people like you and me who want to do a job or take care of a home, raise a family, and try to make a better life for themselves. They certainly weren't going to have that under Saddam Hussein, and I'm not going to defend Saddam Hussein in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it bothers me that Saddam Hussein is getting better treatment than these people. So if the situation were reversed, how would you feel? Let's say, for the sake of argument, that if and when Bush gets in for a second term, for whatever reasons, that the rest of the world suddenly decides that they have to take out the U.S. militarily, and they come in and invade us, and they try to anyway. How do you think we would feel if the situation was reversed? If we took a couple of, Chinese soldiers, and we burned them up and hung them on a bridge, say in, Lanford, Illinois, and then the Chinese army, you know, the invading army comes in and surrounds Lanford, Illinois, and just basically starts bombing the shit out of us and torturing a whole bunch of other people just simply because they happen to live in the same city where this sort of thing happened. You don't treat people like this. You don't treat people like this because that's how you want to be treated if you get defeated. But humans continue to make the same mistakes over and fucking over. In the long run, I hope that what happened at Abu Ghraib and the U.S. invasion of Iraq will lead to a much stronger international community that is actually capable of stopping a rogue nation like the U.S., because that's what we've become, a rogue nation. We went into Iraq in defiance of U.N. law, oddly enough, because we said that Iraq was in defiance of U.N. law. Which, of course, they were not. They allowed the inspectors in, and they allowed them as much access as they could. And in fact, the UN staff that was there was mostly hampered by the Americans, who kept telling them, "Oh, this is where the weapons are," and whenever they went there, that's where they weren't. And there's Bill Sapphire making a big deal out of one old sarin gas rocket that was fired. That was an old one that was probably a dud that was left over from the 91 Gulf War. And you know what? A lot of that shit wasn't effective anyway, simply because it's gone past its expiration date. You know, these gas bombs, they have expiration dates, especially the biological weapons. They just don't go past a certain time. They won't survive because they have a limit as to how long they can remain effective. Now, you can make the case that they were misled. You know, this is bullshit. They were simply looking for the people who were telling them what they wanted to hear. These are people who wanted to invade Iraq for 10 or 15 years. In fact, the Project for a New American Century, you can look that up under Google. They have their own website. It's not a fucking conspiracy theory. It's not a big-ass secret that people are trying to hide. This was a plan that they had from the beginning. But from a moral point of view, you simply don't fucking do this to people. I don't give a shit who they are. I don't care if they're the worst terrorist in the world. The best thing you can do is you can keep them locked up and make sure they don't commit any of those crimes again. If you can get any information out of them, that's great. But you don't have to resort to the same kind of fucking tactics that they do. You absolutely do not have to do that. And it sickens me. It just absolutely fucking sickens me to hear these people defending it. Fucking Rush Limbaugh sitting there in the safety of his own fucking bubble talking about how it's just a bunch of college pranksters. And everybody else in the media who's acting as an apologist for George W. Bush and his policies and the policies of Dick Cheney and the whole administration will not accept anything bad that comes down from these people. And I have news for all of you. You've hitched your wagon to George W. Bush, and how his career goes, your career will go. Your voice no longer deserves to be heard, at least in this respect, because you have been wrong on so many fucking things, and you have been such an obvious purveyor of lies, mistruths, and are completely unconcerned with the lives of anybody else, and to think that this torture was a fun fucking thing. Anyway, let me let you go on an angry rant. We'll be back next time with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Until Thursday's show, see you later. Bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.